Hi, I'm Ben Edlund. I'm the creator of The Tick, and this is episode 2, Arthur Interrupted, of the live-action series. And this is a fairly ambitious, kind of unprecedented television series that had a short run on Fox. I'm also the creator of the characters of The Tick and Arthur, starting with a comic book and doing a cartoon after that. This is episode 2, by our counting, Arthur Interrupted. That's David Burke playing Arthur, and that is Liz Vassie playing Captain Liberty, and of course Patrick Warburton doing a pitch-perfect portrayal of a character I invented when I was 17 years old, dressed in 16 pounds of silicone rubber that didn't breathe and was really a tremendous struggle for him on a daily basis, sometimes 16 hours of being encased in this horrid blue creature. Took KY jelly to get him in and get him out, and a remote control antenna, which really were an incredible breakthrough for bringing this character to the live-action screen. It was crucial. We didn't even know if we were going to be able to accomplish that, actually.
Come out, Arthur.
Look at them go. Oh, so expressive. They really helped make him into something, make him into a believable creature, as believable as anything can be on this show. That's the main title sequence, him hurling himself off of buildings. We started working on the show in the year 2000, actually. We started working on the pilot. And that was Nestor Carbonell as Batman. Well, four key figures. The body of what work we did here was done in 2001 and a little bit into 2002. Here we have the Tick battling a toilet. This worked out quite well in the show. It was an extended sequence in one of the scripts. I was really fond of the whole idea of the Tick dealing with inanimate objects as if they were just other friends he might encounter during the course of a day. In this case, not really a friend, because they're having a clear conflict, toilet constantly backing up and running. And in this, which this particular episode is kind of about Arthur coming out of the superhero closet to his family, and also just kind of different points of view on what is insane and what is sane, the Tick runs his own course with the inanimate objects around his house, such as the toilet.
It's past the point of fixing, my friend.
Always, in all of his incarnations, the Tick has been has had a very loose grasp of reality, which kind of has helped him, because he exists in a world, in fact, that has a fairly loose grasp on reality.
Mother, I'm sure this is it. I called today and I double-checked the address.
Here we have Arthur's family coming in to the Lonely Panda, which was, in other incarnations, well, in the cartoon, there was a diner that they frequented, the main characters of the show, and then here we decided to bring a little bit of exotic flair and make it a rundown Chinese restaurant.
Oh my.
That's a character called the Cape. He was in a number of the early episodes. Good fellow, wonderful face. Delivered dialogue with such dramatic pause that we were often unable to write speeches for him. But he was a great sort of peripheral character.
Oh, and Tick, remember that talk we had about how you yell all the time?
I do indeed!
Yeah. So Tick and Arthur are just pretty much preparing to drop a bombshell on Arthur's parents. And, of course, parallels to the idea of telling your parents that you're gay or Republican can't be ignored. I like this story quite a bit because it's one of the ones that kind of gripped the premise in both fists and kind of really dealt with the relationship between Tick and Arthur and the relationship of superheroes to their families or to the outside world.
Yes, Dad, I thought it was time for me.
There's a caring moment, a moment of sharing and candor on the part of David Burke, who always did these kind of and lunacy on the part of Patrick Warburton. But David was really good at kind of nailing reality, like a real person in all of these ridiculous situations, which really helped as a foil to the Tick, to Patrick, who by nature was over the top at all times.
Mom?
Wait, just another one, please.
The idea of the tick and Arthur having to deal with essentially normal people, like Arthur's mom and Arthur's sister, to me that's one of the sort of the really interesting and some of the funniest material comes from this like collision between, you know, nutballs and conventional human beings.
The womb that spilled Arthur into the world.
Patrick was always great at kind of maintaining kind of complete confidence in whatever he was saying, and most of what he was forced to say on the show was at the very least absurd.
So, Dodd, Arthur tells me you're rather controlling.
Arthur?
Hey, kids.
Everybody, let's drink to Arthur.
The definition of superhero to me, or at least as defined in the world of the Tick, is ineffective. Look at that face. My God, he's fantastic.
Oh, I couldn't if I tried, sis. Arthur and I are as one. A four-legged, two-headed engine of brightness with nowhere to go but up. We're making gravy without...
I liked this, where they had worked out a series of hand signals and codes to try and maintain some form of normalcy. I felt that that was well edited, and both Arthur and the Tick, David and Patrick, handled that really well.
To see the tiny fella who left this behind.
There's such understatement involved in what David's doing in this show, as much as both these characters are kind of giant, naive, simple characters. He brings a lot of kind of credibility, I think, to these roles.
Mother? Can you get up?
Not going so well here at the family lunch.
Come on, Dad.
Arthur, you are going to have to grow up. You can't keep running away.
Very clearly, they're not prepared to accept Arthur as who he is, and here he's in full flower at that moment. That worked out really well, too. The wings were actually designed so they could unfold, which I was amazed by. There's some really clever engineering in there. They couldn't fold back up, so anytime we wanted to have the wings actually retract into the backpack, which we did a couple of times, that was, or possibly only once, that was a computer-generated effect.
You okay, Arthur?
Excuse me, perhaps the moment is inopportune, but I must say I find your sister strangely compelling. Do you think?
And there's Nestor. Everything we put in his mouth was turned into something funny. We don't know how he did it, because we only wrote the occasional intentionally funny line for Batman. Well, I mean, we were always trying, but he was just so perfect. We return now to the Tick's battle with an inanimate object. Although you can kind of think of a toilet as animate, it's full of moving parts, and it does occasionally sound like it's talking. I think so, anyway.
I have no choice but to resort to chemical warfare.
This runner actually expanded far past what appears in the show to a certain point where he was trapped in his bathroom. This was in one script version. He was trapped in his bathroom and the toilet had begun an argument with the bathtub, and he was in fact being excluded from the voices in his own head. Actually, they got to a point where they were arguing whether or not there were Chinese people in the Bible, which I always wanted to see that hit the air. But actually, Fox, for some reason, decided they didn't... it's a subjective issue, but they didn't like the idea of talking toilets that much. To me, I think that's a cornerstone of comedy, talking toilets.
Hey, Tick, I have to go out. It's really important. I have to go alone.
Arthur's going to go off to try and sort of do damage control on the disaster that took place earlier in the afternoon. He's going to meet his parents at a hotel, or his mother and sister. We've used this joke more than once, actually, in the series, which is trying to leave the Tick at the apartment. There's certainly a loyal, almost golden retriever quality to the Tick, and the idea of having a 400-pound blue man that you have to almost lock the door on to keep him from following you, we found funny. This was actually, this moment, I thought, kind of cool. Pretty creepy for the Tick.
Arthur.
Jeez.
That shot, that silhouette of Beth Howland.
Mom?
I'm here, son.
What's going on?
And then, of course, we come to find that Dave Foley is in the episode, which was quite a coup.
Mom, who is
we were all extremely pleased. I'm a very big Kids in the Hall fan.
My sister called me because of their deep...
There's something just naturally funny about Dave Foley. You'll notice he has a cast on his arm, and that is not something we put on him. He actually showed up for shooting with a broken I guess a broken wrist, possibly a broken hand, something, you know. He's actually a furious, tempestuous, drunken man most of the time. That's not true. He's not. But somehow, along the way, he had broken his hand.
To get your jollies. But soon,
and we just felt like, actually, that's pretty cool, because in this, he plays somebody who deprograms deluded superhero wannabes. You can figure that an occupation like that would incorporate quite a bit of wrestling, actually, and cattle prodding and you know, pushing men in leotards into solitary confinement, something that actually takes place towards the end of this episode.
I'm leaving.
But yeah, he's so funny. There's a shot here coming up where he makes just one little expression that to me is cool. That is such a good sort of... It looks either like he's, you know, filling a pair of Depends or having the best hug of his life. This was a cause for some concern. That red dart that fires from the gun, seen head on, looked for everyone to many people as if he had actually been shot, and that was a blossom of blood pouring out of his belly. But it never bothered me. I don't know. It seemed to. It became an issue. We almost went so far as to have to use Paintbox, which it's a sort of post CGI thing to kind of color the fronds of that dart a different color. Here again. Look at that. That's a nice shot, actually. What a strange toilet. That's a platform toilet. They're very big in discos. You can see that, like, it's got about 9 inches of green.
Shut up.
Giving Patrick the opportunity to talk to objects was a real goldmine, because anything he's looking at when he's in the suit and sort of acting as the Tick, he takes so seriously. The pathos of a man who doesn't know that a toilet doesn't think. Oh, and that's Arthur made out of fried eggs and bacon, which is a really beautiful visual idea. I think Chris McCulloch came up with that one, one of the guys that I brought over from the cartoon.
Oh, Arthur, you were always number one in my book.
This is fairly early in the development of Batman Well and Captain Liberty, which we intentionally tried to keep some distance between them, you know, make them slightly more sane, somewhat disparaging of the Tick and Arthur in a lot of the episodes, because they're like real friends. I really like how that white-haired gentleman deeply considers the possibility that he's seen that fried egg man. And here we are at the Institute. Now, you can see them in the sort of periphery of how this was cut together. We had a lot of very weird-looking people, all, you know, fine, fully formed humans in their own right, but really interesting faces that kind of populated this insane asylum, many of which we were asked to cut because, actually, in its raw form, this episode was an interesting animal. It was... strangely, or maybe deeply sad. Just this whole vision that we captured of the insane asylum was really, you know, it was strongly One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest influenced, and had some of that grim bleakness, and it still does have a little bit of it, but in its raw form, as I said, it was I don't know what you'd call it. It was certainly comedic, but it also had a lot of sort of disturbing moments. Quiet, disturbing moments. The Tick functions for Arthur in a kind of Don Quixote way. He's fearless and unafraid to dream, and Arthur's dream is to be a superhero. One of the subtext kind of ideas that we had in the show was that maybe the Tick doesn't exist. Maybe the Tick was simply a figment of Arthur's imagination.
Well, I am. I just don't understand.
The Tick, of course, left alone and to his own devices, has run riot in the apartment, and his only confidant, that toilet, offers him little solace.
Fondue.
At first, I was not so down with this run, this humorous run of fondue for you and fondue for me, but I have to say, Nestor... again, sort of elevates or certainly finds the way to capture the material that he's given and actually make it funny under almost any circumstance. We only screwed him up a couple of times in 9 shows, leaving him kind of hanging with a crappy line. Their relationship, Captain Liberty and Batman, well, Liz and Nestor, their characters had a kind of... We were moving somewhere with their relationship that I thought was going to get to an interesting place. I think we oversimplified and kind of over-caricatured their romantic entanglement, especially in the pilot where they begin to kiss immediately upon seeing each other. Something about that was a little too, simplistic for my taste.
Simple no would suffice.
But that's the interesting thing about making a show that is as expensive and as sort of weirdly ambitious as this one was. It puts you in a position where you have to deal with a kind of committee creation process, and a lot of things that come into it are, one has to adapt to, or one can never adapt to, but they'll still be there. And I think that in part explains, if you noticed, there's a kind of tonal inconsistency to this first 9 episodes, or the only 9 episodes of this primetime series. If we had been given more time, if we had been able to get through a full season, I think we would have been able to iron out the places that felt rough and the places where these characters were more than one character kind of competing for the same suit. For example, the Tick himself, as we moved forward, he began to depend more and more on stupidity instead of insanity. Something that in his voice, you know, his naive qualities sort of started to take over to the detriment of some of the other things that he has been capable of.
People who think that putting on tights or a mask and a cape and trying to save people is an act of madness.
Patrick was able to sell so much of it that I actually don't feel like it was something we couldn't have just sort of slowly molded into a slightly more sophisticated take on this bizarre creature.
Normal? Egad!
I think everyone has some access to a neurotic, self-esteem-challenged person waiting to become something, and I think that's Arthur, and it's probably, in a lot of ways, any one of us. He's kind of a type, and Batman, well, functions as a type, you know, and the Tick actually functions as a type.
I'm sorry, ladies. Visiting hours are over for this.
We're going to spring Arthur. So this episode is preceded with alacrity. These things go fast. There's only 22 minutes of them, I suppose. Batman, well, Nestor again kind of handling this role of completely confident jerk in a really likable way, in my opinion. That guy, when he comes hurtling against the door, an off-screen blow from Captain Liberty, that's one of the most violent dispatches of a person in the series, I think. He really threw himself into his work on that day. And you can see, yes, over to the edges of each screen, you can see some pretty screwed up looking folks. And I like that old guy in the background there who appears to be dealing with imaginary wallpaper. I think one of the things that was interesting to me was kind of how crazy we could get on primetime. We were trying to figure out how much spice to put in there, like how much sex and darkness. Here we did our best to try and bring this callback of the talking toilet and make it seem as though Arthur was sort of finally seeing a window into how crazy the Tick was, or perhaps becoming as crazy as the Tick. And certainly it's just the Tick calling for him.
Arthur!
That's a pretty good door pull. Not all of our effects, given our compressed schedule and kind of limited budget, came off as well as we wanted them to do. That's a fairly simple one. Oddly enough, in the course of the whole series, there are very few moments where the Tick actually expresses his tremendous strength. I wish there were more, in fact, and that door is just one of them.
They think I'm insane. They threw me in here.
No, that was the mom and daughter last week. The mom and daughter.
Here, of course, he just ripped the door off its hinges, and you'll see in a moment he is supposed to tear Arthur out of his suit.
Us, Arthur, but we just have to accept them for what they are. Now, your mother wants...
This was probably shot at about 2 in the morning. Every day we shot went over. But look at the difficulty with which a man who can tear a steel door off its hinges You know, he kind of tears it off there, but that is not the the sweeping, powerful gesture of a man who can lift a truck.
But I have to do one more thing.
All right. How you doing?
I love that, the way that Patrick says, how you doing? And here we have Dave Foley in his, you know, touchingly disturbed portrayal of a deeply latent superhuman. I like that. That was one of his little flourishes, pulling a transparent wing over his junk.
Superhero deprogramming center has been closed down by the authorities.
And the denouement.
Is there any other kind?
Actually, this would be an epilogue.
Arthur, I made a mistake committing you to that institution.
We were planning on bringing back the sister and the mother for a couple of other things. I always wanted to do a cookout episode. I thought that would be pretty good. Have the tick throw a child so far up into the air in a spirit of buoyant, kind of avuncular fun that he gets kind of caught up in the telephone wires. And I like this. This is very typical of where we wanted to go. Look at Patrick's face there. Oh, the sweetness. But the idea of creating a family moment by grabbing the skulls of the ones you love most and slamming them together, basically, in a forced hug, is very much kind of an expression of where we wanted to go with kind of everything that happened to and around the tick. He always brought love, but he brought it with a hammer. Normalcy brought to superheroes is really kind of the secret of the humor. There's a face he makes at the end of this that is fantastic. Here it comes.
In the hindquarters of evil.
That's a wonderful way to use the muscles that the universe or God or somebody put into your face. I was really pleased with how that episode worked out. In all of these, we'll find not everything works out perfectly, of course, but there was a tone we were working on that was heading in a direction I think we all agree had something going for it. The tone we were going for was kind of cartoon-like, that you were allowed to do things that kind of approached creepy familiarity. I couldn't even describe it. I think if I could describe the tone, we would have achieved it. Well, thanks for watching. This has been Ben Edlund, watching with you, episode 2, Arthur Interrupted, of The Tick. Hope you enjoyed it.